Okay, welcome back. Now, in addition to all the things we've been talking about tonight already, we have a World War III scenario knocking at the door. Is it going to come in? Probably, incrementally. But the odds of it just going away or receding are very small at this point. Now, what are you going to do if you're in a city or an urban area which is a target, or which will be obviously shut down in case of any kind of an attack on this country? Martial law will be declared. Stay home. Shelter in place. Do not go out. That's what's going to happen. Now, for some people who get that warning, there'll be a window, maybe an hour or two or three before they can really start to manifest a martial law shutdown. And that means that'll give you a chance to get your go bag, your getaway bag, and get away. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, what kind of money requirements you should have. Are they going to just allow cash money to continue to exist? More and more places, apparently businesses in the U.S. are now saying, no, we need a card. We use your debit or credit card. We're not going to take any more cash. We don't do that because of robberies. Okay.
Taco Bell just started doing that.
Have they? Oh, all right.
Yes. I went to Taco Bell the other day, and I can't eat there anymore. You got to order your own food. You got to pay with the card. I mean, these businesses are just so damn lazy. They make you do everything, you know, and then you pay them the same price, right?
I hate Taco Bell. I'll tell you why. Short story. A couple of guys working helped me do some things about a year ago now that I couldn't do by myself. Mm-hmm. Nice guys, and they went to Taco Bell lunch break and came back with, a dozen tacos for $8 or something. I don't know what it was. Beef tacos. I didn't eat any. I don't do meat. But they were eating these beef tacos, and they ate most of them. There were three or four left, and they left them packaged, wrapped up individually in the bag, and went back a couple hours later to finish them off. And they noticed some movement in the meat.
Oh,
and they looked closer.
God.
Maggots.
That's gross.
Maggots.
Oh,
maggots,
man.
In the beef. No kidding.
Oh,
I saw,
man.
It. I went out there, and they were maggots in the beef.
Disgusting.
They were in there before, but they weren't. They grow fast, maggots. Anyway, in the few hours that lapsed, the maggots became obviously present. So, good luck. Good luck. God knows what else is in it, but at least maggots in that case. Go ahead. Welcome back, Mitchell Henderson. Okay.
You're welcome. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about money, the history of money, so that you can understand what money is and what it what effect it has and stuff, okay? So money, basically, money is power. The love of money is the root of all evil. The history of money is the history of power and the history of violence. Please follow the logic in this history. You will see that money leads directly to the apocalypse. Okay? So humans' first economy was a hunter-gatherer economy. People hunted for meat and foraged for edible vegetables. There was no method for accumulating or storing wealth. At best, you had a few days' worth of food at any one time that you were carrying with you or whatever. The first forms of accumulating wealth were laid out in the Cain and Abel story of Genesis. Abel, which in Hebrew means breath, he was an animal herder, and God was pleased with his work. The advance of herding over human gathering is that you could store food for a long time, and that food was mobile. You could store wealth in a mobile form and guarantee freshness. You simply kill one of your livestock when you need to. The wool and leather also provided clothing and shoes. You must care for and protect your herd from other animals. They eat grass that you cannot eat and turn it into meat which you can eat. Animal mayhem was not moral. That meant cutting a slab off the hindquarters of an animal while he was still alive to keep the rest of the animal fresh as fresh meat.
What? Wait a minute. Hold on. I didn't know this. When was this practiced?
In ancient times. They call it animal mayhem. So,
I'd say.
God did not like
hideous.
This. It is hideous. Okay. In other words, you are not supposed to be cruel to your animals. Basically, that's the bottom line. For example, Pancho Villa during the Mexican Revolution would round up the animals and take them to a watering hole or spring in the desert. He would then blind them so that they would remain near the water so his men would have something to eat when they came back to that watering hole. He did this as a logistical necessity of war. Okay, you could not let your herd get too big because then you could not protect them from predators. Wealth was limited to how many herdsmen you had in your family or tribe. Animal husbandry implies responsibility to your herd. Okay, Cain, which in Hebrew means acquire and spearer, implies both greed and violence. God was not pleased with the way Cain accumulated and stored wealth. First, it was not mobile. Second, you had to surround your crops with a fence to keep other animals from eating your crops and keep other humans out. Right. It was a selfish means of acquiring surplus food because you had to claim exclusive ownership of the land that you were going to grow food on for the next few months. Also, you would have to use a spear to keep the larger animals out, including other humans. Cain was a story of selfish acquiring that led to violence. In China, they use pictograms for words. The Chinese pictogram for country or nation is a rectangle divided by lines into four squares representing a rice paddy. It has a spear next to it and is surrounded by a boundary. It implies both the fence and violence. This is abbreviated by just a rectangle. If you draw a line through it such that the rectangle is in the middle, that is the pictogram for China, which means middle country. Okay. In Egypt, 14,000 years ago, the Sahara was a grassy savanna. When it started to dry up, the people had to hang out by the Nile River. They began to farm instead of herd animals to up the food production. Before that, when looking at ancient skeletons, there were no signs of violence. Once people began farming on the riverbanks, the skeletons began to have arrows in them and crushed skulls. It is not just the stories that link agriculture to violence. The link is archaeologically proven. This is an economics issue. The same man had to farm the same specific place, and fences had to be built between people and enforced by spears so that they could enforce the boundaries. Wealth was now accumulated into barns. Consider what Christ said later. Consider the birds of the air. They do not toil or spin into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Agriculture implied a lack of faith in God to take care of your needs. It implied a self-sufficiency and man not needing God. So agriculture divided man from man from nature, and man from God. The agricultural revolution was the foundation of civilization, and civilization was man's revolution against God. At any rate, Cain kills Abel, and God curses him, saying, "So now you are cursed from the earth, and you will be a restless wanderer on the earth." Then Cain is sent east of Eden. Looking at this plainly, it is obvious that the Jews are the children of Cain. They are clearly the restless wanderers of the earth. They even say that themselves. Yeah. The Zionist project is to overcome this curse and murder humanity so that they can have more for themselves. This is the World Economic Forum Great Reset. The first civilization on earth was Sumer. Sumerian language is not related to any other language on earth, except for agricultural terms, which are borrowed from Semitic. Sumer is east of Eden. So this is Sumer is the first civilization. This is where Cain went to. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we can tell because the Semitic words are farming terms. The next transition in the exchange of goods was money. You see, if all you have is food products, you must move them around quickly before they spoil. So there is a limit on both how long and how much food you can store. Almost immediately, the first method of storing agricultural goods long-term was to ferment grains and fruits into beer and wine. You could store a great deal of beer and wine for a fairly long time, but even it was subject to spoilage. This meant that foodstuffs must be traded rapidly. Also, artisans started specializing in making tools and clothing, leaving farming and settling into towns. There was a commodity money based on a certain weight of barley. The Sumerians had to invent money because of the increasing number of farmers and city people caused the barter system to break down. They adopted a coin they called the shekel to be the new medium of exchange. So the shekel was the first money. Coinage also meant that there was no limit on how much time you could store wealth, nor any limit on how much you could acquire or accumulate. Now, a few elites could store, accumulate, and concentrate wealth into a few hands. Money made this possible. Israeli money is called the shekel this very day. Initially, money represented commodities, and the money was tied to the production of something. You could invest your surplus money in increasing the production of commodities. Two things then determine price, supply and demand. Mm-hmm. If you produced something that is not in demand, then you will not get a high price for it and may not gain from your investment. On the other hand, if something is in short supply but many demand it, the price will be high and your investment will bring you a profit. Next, people could determine that they could make a profit on an investment that did not have the money to invest. They could go to a money lender. The money lender had to make money, so they charged interest on the loan. This was considered by most cultures to be parasitic activity and was called usury. The Jews had found their niche in society. They were already considered filthy, immoral people in the lands that they were a guest in. They became the huge investment banks. Soon governments were borrowing from them, especially when they were going to war. War allowed Jews to make wild profits from every side because they lent money to every side in the conflict. In 1837, the stock ticker was invented, and a new kind of profit could be made from money, speculative profits. Speculative profits allowed even more concentration of wealth to occur. It has led to where only 8 men own half of everything on Earth with 8 billion people in it, and 0.01% own practically everything and gather at Davos, Switzerland, each year to plot and plan the extermination of humanity.
Hold on, Mitch. That's important. When the Davos, every year if you hear Davos, pay attention, because they're there and they actually do let a lot of this stuff out. They have closed door meetings that are very private and secure, but the people at Davos are not there to play games. They are planning and scripting your future. No question.
Your extinction. Your extinction is what they're planning.
You got it.
So the concentration of money is a concentration of power, and that power is malign and evil. It is the children of Cain attempting to murder everybody else. Cain has not changed. In 1933, there was a cure for this problem. National Socialist Germany outlawed speculative profits and only allowed productive profits to be made. Germany in 1939 was as wealthy and developed as America was in 1959. While the whole world was mired in Zionist-engineered Great Depression, Germany pulled herself out of it, quit oppressing their people, quit having sex with other kids, with their kids, quit impoverishing the workers, and built a better world for their people. We called their alliance the Axis, but they called it the Anti-Comintern Pact to fight the Jewish Bolsheviks that were destroying humanity. From 1948 to 1991, the United States was the controlled opposition to the Bolsheviks. From 1992 under Clinton until now, we are the Bolsheviks. Okay? So Jewish Zionism is the beast, and they want to make their final change to money, wherein through the central banks, they control all money and therefore control all humans. The central bank digital currency is the currency of the mark of the beast. The World Wide Web has made this possible. Once again, the letter W in Hebrew also serves as the number 6. Like in Roman numerals, they use letters for numbers. The Hebrews do too. And W is the number 6 in Hebrew. So WWW is 666. Revelation tells you to pay attention to this number.
They took the Bible out of schools. www.http:// www. There you go.
They took the Bible out of schools in the 1960s so that it is not in the consciousness of the younger generations. They will accept the mark of the beast because it is normal and natural thing to do. You will not be able to buy or sell without the mark of the beast. Who took the Bible out of our schools? Madeleine Murray O'Hare, a Jew. Who took it out of our military? Mickey Weinstein, Mikey Weinstein, a Jew. Okay? So this is what's happening. Okay, I just want to just clear something up with the audience. There's a lot of misunderstanding, I think, about the term apocalypse and revelation. So what is it that's being revealed? And apocalypse actually means a revealing. So what's going to happen, or what is happening, is the main point of Revelation and the Apocalypse is that it is going to be revealed. All these evil people and all these evil doings are going to be revealed, and everybody should be able to know it. It should be plain to everybody who the bad guys are and what's going on. Okay, so as we go along, you'll see more and more people waking up to who the problem is, what the problem is. Okay, you'll see people waking up that this government, this is not a democracy we live in. Okay, we don't have free and fair elections. Everything they tell you is a lie. Everything they tell you is a lie.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yep.
So, if the government tells you something is a problem, it's not a problem. The problem is the government, not what the government tells you is a problem. Okay.
Yeah.
So, it's good to have a go bag because you know, the shit can hit the fan. I've been saying all along that what's going to happen is they're trying to just slow walk this because they want to accomplish as much as they can. In other words, they want to finish Gaza before they go to war in with Lebanon. Okay, so that's why they're trying to keep it from escalating. But at the same time, they're sowing the seeds of a major cataclysm. For example, in Ukraine, Germany, United Kingdom, these countries are making not NATO alliances with Ukraine, but individual alliances with Ukraine. So they're saying that if Russia invades Ukraine again, Germany and the United Kingdom will step in. Well, that puts the situation that's NATO attacking Russia, and Russia has to be able to attack Germany and the United Kingdom if they go to war with Russia. And it's a trap to bring Russia. See, they know this, and Europe is going to bring Russia into World War III. They're going to do it.
Mitch, may I say one other thing? I watch, like you and many of you listening, watch the headlines at least, and every single move out of the EU and NATO, it's almost as if they're demanding that they go to war with Russia. They're not playing games. Their verbiage, the language they're using, is insane. They want to die. I'd never seen anything like it. Go ahead, please. It's just crazy.
Okay, so let me go into a go bag, and we're just going to try to be logical about this. To prepare for everything falling apart, you need to have a go bag. This should be ready to go before things get out of control. Every go bag will be different because you have to adapt it to your situation and your environment. So we will talk about principles. We will start with the rule of threes. You can live 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, and 30 days without food. So let's go to air first. A decent gas mask is a good idea just in case. Many governments have resorted to using chemical warfare to kill off the rebellious peoples on the cheap. The Soviet Union did that in Laos in the 1970s to save ground troops from a long, drawn-out conventional campaign of killing off the rebellious hill tribes of Laos. Saddam Hussein used nerve gas to exterminate the Kurds and the Shias. Would our government do that to us? They do not obey the rules when there are rules, so they certainly won't obey them when there aren't, okay? And I want you to think also that they can use tear gas to try to get you out of some place. So, you know, that would be a mess too. But this is like, don't make that the main thing. You could probably get by without it, but if you can get it and you can have it, take it with you, okay?
Hold on, Mitch, before we get too much further down the road, a dwelling, how to make a house safer. A lot of people like to think about going underground. If you build an underground shelter and somebody wants to get you, it'll make it real easy for them to get you. You've got to have an oxygen source, so you're going to have a pipe up. They're going to find it, and they're going to put anything they want down there. That's not a good place to be locked up. The only way an underground house seems to work for shelter is if nobody knows it's there. But good luck building one and not having anybody know. They're going to know.
And in a situation situation where you have fallout where nobody else is going to be outside either. Okay. Because they'll
die
if they're outside. Right.
That's
so,
right.
You know, it's a temporary thing. It's not something that you can hunker down. If you're not mobile, you can be found and you can be attacked. Okay. So I covered right. that, I think, last time.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
So a telltale sign that you are being hit with chemical gases is if you hear artillery rounds going off with low explosive to disperse the gas. In other words, a regular artillery round has a sharp sound, but if it's like a dull thud, that's usually there to disperse gas. That's not a fragmentation round, okay? They can also spray biological agents on you. That will be done by spraying, and the spraying will be at night because ultraviolet light will kill the bacteria or the viruses in the daytime. You will likely not see the gas. If smaller animals are dropping around you, you should mask up. When I worked around nerve gases in the Army, we would often have some birds in a cage, just like a coal mine. When they dropped, we would mask. It takes a smaller concentration to kill them than you. So you have time. If you see them drop immediately, mask up. Or just animals in your environment start dropping, there's a problem. However, the most likely thing you will use a gas mask for is tear gas. Anyone can use tear gas to try and flush you out so they can shoot you. They can use it in the open, in buildings, and even in trenches. Okay? So that's just that I would call a luxury, but a good bet. I mean, you know, if it's not too much trouble to get one, I would get one and carry it with me just in case because you need air. Okay, the next thing is water. To understand water, you should understand some chemistry. Most chemical reactions are usually carried out in a solution. Water is the solution that our body uses. Chemical reactions are what sustains our lives. When mixing two solutions in the laboratory, you usually apply heat to speed up the reaction. In your body, if the solution gets above 105 degrees Fahrenheit, the heat changes the nature of the chemicals that have to react, so life-sustaining chemical reactions cannot take place. You feel sick. If the solution gets below 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit, the chemical reactions slow down. The lower the temperature goes, the slower the chemical reactions are, and the less they are able to sustain life. In this case, you get slower. Okay. The reaction gets slower, you get slower. So shelter is a function of water. You have to keep the water in your body within a narrow range of temperatures. In the winter, you must stay warm, and in the summer, you have to avoid overheating. You also must keep your water volume up. If your blood gets too concentrated, it also impedes chemical reactions, and it also impedes mechanical circulation. The process of a person dying from lack of water in the desert is also a mechanical issue of pumping blood. The thicker your blood, the harder it is for your heart to pump it. In addition, the concentrated substances in your blood demand diluting. The quick way to do this is by vomiting. The vomit throws more water out, making the problem worse. This is a death spiral. Dying of heat is painful, and you feel very sick. When you find people dead of hydration in the desert, you will see that they vomited before they died, usually.
Mitch, we might want to add one other thing. Anyone who's been injected has thickened blood. It's almost a universal.
Oh, yeah.
We call it sludge.
True.
We call it sludge blood. It not
right.
only is sludge, it makes your heart work twice as much to pump it.
Yes.
The heart
it
will
does.
Eventually wear itself out and you'll die sooner. Or the heart will just say, I can't do this anymore. It gets that bad. Not to mention the fact that the blood is not circulating and not delivering oxygen to the body or nutrition. So it's a bad thing all the way around, sludge
blood.
Well,
here it is. What the vaccine does is it makes your body produce, it makes your cells produce hemagglutinin. And hemagglutinin means exactly what it says, hema, blood, glutinin, sticky, glue. It makes your blood sticky, and it makes it stick together, okay? So it's not, I don't know how in the world it could be good for you in any way. Okay, so the only way to dilute the blood is by drinking water. In the desert, you must drink water before you feel thirsty. This is because of the dry air. You are actually dehydrated before you notice it. In the desert, you can slow the chemical reactions in your body down by getting in the shade and staying still so you do not use as much water. This is like in the daytime, travel in the cool of the night. In the cold, you must drink water because the chemical reactions in your body have to create heat to keep you warm. So the chemical reactions need more water to make the solutions for the chemical reactions that are heating you up. If you don't have enough water, you will start getting cold. Chemical reactions will slow down. You will get fatigued. As you get colder, the reactions will slow to a point where you just want to rest. Dying by freezing to death is the opposite. It is relaxing and peaceful. What you can do is build a fire to get warm or get warm in some kind of shelter. So the need for water means the need for water and the need for shelter. For water, I would recommend both a Camelback and an Army canteen. The canteen is for purifying water that you find. The canteen cover has a pocket for purification tablets. When you add the tablets to the canteen, you need to let it sit for about 20, 30 minutes. It needs to close tightly because the gases formed purify the water. You need to do this because if you drink dirty water, you will get sick, vomit, and lose water. You can also boil water to kill bacteria. You cannot afford to be sick. Weakness puts you at a disadvantage. You can buy some water filters that are small and portable. Carry at least one large dark plastic garbage bag to make a solar still. There are two methods. One is to dig a hole, put a cup in the center, cover the hole with the plastic garbage bag using stones to hold it in place. Then place a pebble in the middle so that the water the sun causes to condense on the bag will slide down the weighed down part and drop into the cup. The other is to tie the bag around a branch of a tree or bush. As the plant gives off water, it will collect in the bottom of the bag. The solar still is a must in the West, where there are not many running streams. Water is life.
Got it.
To keep water in your body at the right temperature, wear the appropriate clothing. In winter, practice layering, like thermal underwear, then good cloth clothing that wicks moisture away from your skin, and heavy jackets that are waterproof and windproof. Your main mode of transportation will be LPCs, or leather personnel carriers. Have good, warm, dry boots. Wear socks that wick the moisture away from your skin, and socks that keep your feet warm, like wool. Wear warm hair gear. Your head is a major point of heat loss. Wear a scarf to keep your neck warm. Just think ahead and prepare for your environment. Know how to shelter yourself for sleep. I saw a video of a guy in the woods in Alberta in the wintertime. He built a lean-to out of saplings and covered it with pine branches. Then he built a log fire. He slept in a single wool blanket. He had a temperature gauge that showed the temperature. It was minus 26 degrees Fahrenheit outside. But in the lean-to where he slept, it was 60 degrees Fahrenheit. I was stuck in the National Forest once at night. The temperatures dropped below zero. I had no gear. However, there were some large plastic garbage bags lining trash cans. I put one over my legs and lower body and cut a hole in the other one to make a poncho, which I pulled over my torso and arms. It was actually too hot. It was below zero, but it was too hot in those garbage bags.
Interesting.
I was sweating all night. Still better than freezing. Take a good fleece or wool blanket with you. Also, get a space blanket. The space blanket will also shield you from thermal sights. Mm-hmm. They usually have a bright orange exterior. Try to cover that by sewing camouflage cloth to it. It will keep you warm and dry in very cold temperatures. Also, have a small rain poncho to keep you and your equipment dry in the rain. And you can use it to make a lean-to or a small tent. Exposure to the elements will wear you down and weaken you. These materials are essential, not luxuries. Do not expect to find this stuff on the fly. When I was 14, I would run away from home and hitchhike across the country. I would find cardboard boxes, newspaper, and plastic and make myself shelter for the night in bushes by the highway. Be resourceful. Look up the kinds of expedient shelters that you can make in your area from local materials. There's usually YouTubes that show you this. You will need fire to keep warm, boil water, and cook food. I carry redundant ways to start a fire, like a magnifying glass, cigarette lighter, and waterproof matches. I carry some fire starters like hexamine sticks, or what is sold as fire sticks. If you run out with a knife, you can get a small stick and shave the wood on it to make a mass of light kindling that easily catches on fire. In the winter, do not build a fire under tree branches covered in snow. It will melt and put your fire out. Sometimes you will not be able to have a fire. I carry a small camping sterno can and some hexamine cooking tablets. You can dig a hole and cook in there to keep the light from shining too far and giving away your position. Starting a fire can save your life. So this is something you should practice. I have all this and more in a medium-sized go bag that has backpack straps on it. Okay, so food. Food is the gasoline that your body needs to keep going. The more you move, the more food that you will need. The colder it is, the more food that you will need. In my go bag, I keep food that is ready to eat and compact, not jerky, and the protein bars that bodybuilders use. I also have a bag of small Baby Ruth candy bars. In 1992, I was traveling in the high altiplano of Bolivia with a cholera epidemic raging through the countryside. I could not afford to get sick because I was traveling in an extremely remote area. I even took mercy on a Canadian woman who was stuck in a small Indian village where there was no possibility of medical help and gave her some candy bars. It was a major positive change in her situation because at least while it was passing through her, she got some sugar and got some energy and built up her strength. Some days that was all I ate because if the food available was not cooked and served piping hot, I would not eat it. Don't get cholera. Don't get dysentery. Don't get those things, okay? They will drag you down. I did fine and did not get cholera. I carry them because I know they work for me. While traveling by boat up the Mekong in Cambodia, we stopped at Kampong Chenang and many got sandwiches with cold cuts. If it was not dead and piping hot, I would not eat it. Those that did spent the next week in the outhouse. It is the same principle as not drinking dirty water. It is a net loss of water when you get sick. The same for food. Dysentery will both dehydrate you and prevent any food absorption. I have a few backpacking meals that are dried that you just add hot water to and some small light bags of mashed potatoes. Nothing that requires elaborate cooking. This is traveling food for a go bag, okay? If in your travels you may find canned food soup. In 1971 in Alaska, me and a buddy found a can of chicken soup that was canned in 1941. It was 30 years old but tasted like it was just canned yesterday. Carry a P38 can opener so you can get the food out of the cans. You need to take tools with you to capture food, a .22 caliber rifle and fishing hooks and a line, a knife to skin and prepare the animals. To reduce noise that attracts attention, learn to make animal traps. Also, you can carry a pellet gun to kill small game because they do not make much noise at all. Okay, no. Learn what...
Pellet gun's pretty neat, actually. Think about it.
Yeah. You can get a lot of small game with a pellet gun, and it does not make noise. So learn what plants you can eat in your area. Learn to avoid poison plants. There are far more plant foods than you know. At one time, humans lived off of these plants almost exclusively. There are more things to eat in the spring. The cambium of trees is edible, rather bland and chewy, but people have survived on it. There's been research about cambium of trees that lived. In most areas, even in the desert areas, they're at higher elevations, but there are trees there, okay? If you can get a hold of an army mess kit, you can cook in it because it also serves as a pan that you can fry in. Take metal silverware because it is durable and it can be used for other things. Get a good knife that can be a weapon, a cutting tool, and a tool to clean and dress animals to eat. Make it a knife that you can use for all jobs. It should have a good hilt so that when you stab, your hand does not slip onto the blade and cut you. Most of the people that I arrested for stabbing people with a knife had cuts on their hands from their hands slipping onto the blade. The handle needs to be rough because there is a lot of blood in a knife fight. Blood is very slippery, and you don't want the knife to slip out of your hand. Jim Bowie invented the perfect fighting knife, the Bowie knife. It meets all of the requirements. Okay, it is a good fighting knife. It is the best. Okay, so next I want to cover engineering tools. In war, combat engineers have very important roles: mobility, countermobility, and survivability. For mobility, take a pair of wire cutters so you can cut fences, a small crowbar to breach houses and buildings, a hatchet with some heft to it so you can break through or into things, and a small saw and a decent knife so you can cut into things. Also take some good rappelling rope so you can get down cliffs or escape off the tops of buildings. For countermobility, you need the same tools to construct obstacles, some as simple as cutting down a tree to block the way. Making booby traps also slows people down, and these same tools can allow you to construct them. You can also use them to destroy your enemy's mobility by destroying their transportation assets directly if given a chance. Have some string and paracord to help you make booby traps. For survivability, you will need a good shovel to dig with. The Army entrenching tool is compact and comes with a carrying case. It is durable. It can also be used as a weapon. Ask any combat veteran who has had to engage the enemy in hand-to-hand combat. You use anything available in such a fight. Use that to dig protective holes for cover. The above tools can be used to construct shelter so you can get some proper rest and stay dry and warm. Also, have paracord to help you construct shelters. Have string to set up early alarms, like tin cans with rocks in them, to make noise and alert you to someone coming. In the jungle, we used to find a place near a monkey's nest to set up camp. They would raise a ruckus when you first get there, but will calm down when you don't leave and leave them alone. But then, when a new group of humans comes into the area, they will start screaming again. This is an alarm. Out in the American West, if you go up a canyon, the birds will yell at you on the way up. Once you stop and go about your business, the birds will shut up. But if more humans or other predators come your way, they will start yelling again. Learn about your environment and use it to make life easier for yourself. Okay, and then just some miscellaneous items. A small gun cleaning kit and a Leatherman-like tool would be handy for repairs.
Well, also that's a Leatherman-like tools. We used to call those Swiss Army knives, right?
Same yes, thing. But now they have them. They also have like a pair of pliers on it too. So it's a little bit more versatile. So
right. Yeah, that's good. That's a really important. It's called the Leatherman, L-E-A-T-H-E-R-M-A-N, in case you don't know, for those of you who
there's
know.
There's lots of different brands. They have them all over the place. You know, get a good one, you know. And if you can't get a good one, get any kind, okay? I mean, it can come in handy.
You betcha.
Also, a toothbrush and some toothpaste. When toothpaste runs out, use charcoal from your fire as toothpaste. Just grind it up good and use the powder to clean your teeth. It cleans well. I mean, your teeth look like black, but it doesn't matter how they look. It's going to clean all the germs and tartar and stuff away. I also took a washcloth with a small bar of soap. I live in the desert, so there is no point in me carrying more than this, okay, because I'm not going to have a lot of water where I need towels and all that kind of stuff. Okay, a small first aid kit will be good just for comfort. Have some bandages and cloth tape. Have different size bandages for different size wounds. Carry some triple antibiotic ointment for cuts and abrasions. Carry some 1% cortisone cream for burns. I also have some alcohol pads for minor wounds. Okay. Actually, I even got some of this. There's a powder that you pour on wounds and it stops bleeding.
So, really? Oh, that's right. It's
Yeah,
it coagulates the blood. I forget the name of it.
Right.
It's a powder. They use it. You know where they use it? If you have let's say you have a parrot, and you have to trim the parrot's toenails, and you trim the toenail too close to the quick, and you cut into the quick with the little clippers, the bird will start bleeding out that particular toenail where you've cut too much off. And they sell in pet stores a powder. You just put a little on your fingertip, push it on the actual toenail that you've cut too short, and it'll stop the bleeding in a second or two. It just works.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. I think they could you can buy it. It's, I think, $7 for two packs, and it's called
over-the-counter
blood
stuff.
Stop.
I don't know the name of it, but it works for birds. Blood stop? Okay.
Yeah, blood stop. You can find it. I found it at Walmart before, so, you know. So most importantly, realize that this is not for a day trip. It is for long-term survival. There will be no medical backup for you, so don't take risks and be careful. avoid injury. Even a small injury could result in the degradation of your ability to survive, and it could lead to your death. Okay? So, you know, just use your common sense, you know. So you're on the run, civilization has collapsed. Why do you need the engineering tools? Well, you know, I've got a hefty hatchet. I've got a little crowbar that will fit in the back part. It's not too big, but it's better than nothing, okay? I've got wire cutters. I mean, you know, basically burglary tools, because you may have to burgle to be survive. I mean, if you see a house and there's possibly food and things you need in it, sure, and nobody's around, I mean, you know, don't, there is no law and order. If there's no law and order, then, you know, do what you have to do, you know.
And no 9/11 response.
Right, right. So you're kind of on your own. Now next week I'm going to try to talk about survival driving, because you got your go bag. I've told you about what you do when you get out away from town, but what about the trip from when you're getting from your place to out to a safe place? So I'm going to talk about that next week, sort of survival driving, okay?
Gotcha.
Because there'll be different conditions than exist right now.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's good to know those things. So
what are your thoughts on EMP bursts now? If there is a nuclear war, would that not be almost an automatic prelude to it? Wouldn't they do that
first?
Yeah,
listen, they're going to drop EMPs. You know, if I was the enemy, I would drop one over the eastern United States and one over the western. Now, these don't blow up people on the ground or do any damage on the ground, but
right,
they fry all the electronics, which is important. So say you have, say as an additional thing, say there's more than one of you and you want to be able to communicate with each other, just close. You can buy some cheap walkie-talkies, but have them in a Faraday cage for when the bomb goes off. Because, see, those don't rely on cell towers. They don't rely on repeaters. They're just, you know, from one device to another. So those may be useful. When you go, I actually have one. This is a cheap little thing. They say you can talk up to 20 miles, but, you know, ideally you're only going to be talking a few miles to somebody, okay,
right,
at best.
Right, I think you're right. Sure.
So, and you just have it in a Faraday cage when the initial thing goes off, and then you can use them afterwards. Because, like I said, they do not rely on any repeaters or anything, or any cell towers or anything like that, so... You know, communication can be handy, but, you know, just prioritize. I mean, you could get where you have a luxury go bag for millionaires or something, but realistically, you know, that's not where you're surviving. You're not going out there trying to live the life of luxury. Okay.
Well, I sure do like the idea of that Leatherman for a basic must have. That's a very smart item.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just got all those tools in it. When are you going to need a screwdriver? You need a flathead, you need a Phillips. They even have, like, little, they've got the pliers on them and stuff. So you can get into things and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Take things apart, get into them. I mean, it's survival. That's why I call them engineering tools. They help you get into stuff and get out of stuff, okay? So they're very important.
About how many pounds of food do you think you can put in your go bag?
Here's what I do. Like, in my go bag, I have enough food inside my go bag for maybe 2 or 3 days just on that.
Right.
And this is just to travel and get through, get out and stuff, okay? Because you're going to have to get food from somewhere else. But then what I have is I have a basic go bag that I can put on as a backpack, okay? And then I've got a camelback to go over that also, okay, so for water and whatnot. And then what I do is I've got a little portable tent that sleeps like four people, and I've got I have 3 or 4 other just bags full of the same kind of food, you know, nuts and jerky and, right. And bars and stuff like this that I'll carry. Now, if I have to abandon it, I have to abandon it. But initially, if I can take it with me, I'll take that stuff with me as far as I can take it. Okay.
Gotcha.
So better to have it available than not have it available. You know, because listen, it may be very tough to get out of where you are, or it might be fairly easy. You may encounter a lot of trouble, or you may not. So people.
Here's the other side of that coin. You've got to have a place to go. So finding a place to go to is essential. How do we do that?
Well, what you want to do is, this is something that you do now. I mean, you have to think, okay, you've got a go bag, so where are you going to go to? Well, some people have cabins up in the hills or outside town or something, you know. Well, that's where you're going to go to, probably. That'll be your, don't think of that as your final place, but as your rallying point, and then you're going to use that as your base from which you're going to travel and survive or whatnot. You may not be able to stay there, but at least go there to rally, get yourself together, and know the area around there, okay? Now, if you don't have a cabin to go to, you need to find some place where you can go out in where you live, you know, far away from things. Just think of it this way. Just think of it as, does this place have any strategic value? Is it something that the military is interested in? Is it something that is it critical to as a line of supply and communications? You want to stay away from those areas. Go out to places that it's just pointless for military operations to go on. Think back to, like, my story about the landmines on the Korean DMZ. They put them on the trails, so don't walk on the trails. They're not going to put landmines just willy-nilly out there because it's a waste of time and effort. Okay. So it's the same thing for where you're going to retreat to. Don't retreat to a popular tourist site. Okay. Don't retreat to a strategic area. Retreat to the middle of nowhere, you know. If you got rocks, caves, stuff like that, that's very helpful, you know. Sure. The more bush and stuff there is, the harder it's going to be to find you. Even in deserts and desert environments, you have vegetation along streams and rivers and arroyos and stuff. I mean, you know, don't go to a bone dry desert in the middle of nowhere because you have no shelter or anything there. So, you know, listen, I went down to Chile and Peru. They have, the desert is so dry there that there's not even a fly, not even a sprig of grass, no life forms at all. But you go across this flat expanse of desert, then it drops off. These rivers come down from the Andes, and there's a river valley. And it's all green and lush and nice there, okay? So.
Is this the, are you talking about the Atacama Desert?
Yeah, the Atacama Desert. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh, okay.
It's bone dry. But where a river is, there's you know, there's vegetation and stuff. So and vegetation is where you're going to hide, you know, besides food and other things. It makes it hard to see you. You don't want to attract attention to yourself. Out in the middle of a desert, you're just a sitting duck. Everybody can see you, you know.
Right.
So just choose a place wisely. But, you know, I live here in New Mexico. I've been over in Arizona a lot, and it's a desert. But even out there, you'd be surprised. I mean, you think of Arizona as this big, dry place. You can go up in the mountains. There's lush, big forests there, green as can be. So it's just, you know, look around, you know. You can find some places that will afford you some shelter and make it easier for you to survive. In other words, if other life lives there, the more life that lives there, the more likely you're going to be more comfortable living there. Okay, the places
gotcha.
With less life is going to be harder for you to live in. Okay, so it's just common sense. But scout that out and get to know it before you go. I mean, you're going to have to get to know it because you're going to have to find a place that is not strategic and is not of any value to the military or the government. Keep in mind, too, that the government has been practicing for decades now in literal warfare. When everything falls apart, the U.S. military intends to just control the coastal areas and navigable waterways. Okay, they're not going to try to control western Kansas or whatever, okay, because, well, why? You know, there's nothing out there.
Gotcha. All right, well, that's quite a tour de force there you just gave us. A lot of good information. Again, hang on. You can find all of Mitch's programs under his columnist section on the left-hand side. So if you want to go back through it and make notes, yeah, by all means, do. All right, how much time do we have, Mitch, before the things get bad? It's getting worse.
Well, listen,
all the time.
Like I said, they're slow walking it because remember I said protracted war is not good for a country, but their intention is to destroy humanity. So they are doing protracted war. So let's put it this way. When is the hell going to come to you? Well, when is the hell come to the Palestinian people? They're in it right now. Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So it's just going to expand and expand and expand until finally, listen, NATO and the United States is going to provoke a war with Russia. And Russia's not going to pussyfoot around. They're going to push the button. Okay. So they're ready for it. We're not. So they live in a dream world. Our government and our politicians and everybody just lives in this dream world. And I'm going to try to talk next time about right. The dream world that they live in. Okay.
Very good. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that. Okay, my friend, thank you for that. Excellent. A lot of work there.
You're
welcome. You did a good job, as always. Okay.
Okay, well, thank
you
much.
All righty. Mitchell Henderson. Look on the left-hand side. We'll put his program up from tonight. Up there a little later this evening, and, well, wherever you are, maybe the middle of the night, but we'll get it posted, as always. Thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure. We will talk tomorrow night in 21 hours. Have a safe day tomorrow. Be good. And still time to prepare. So if you can prepare at all, do it. Talk soon. Talk tomorrow.